Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Research at the National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett, and I want to welcome the callers and chatters to Research at the National Archives and Beyond. This show will provide individuals interested in genealogy an opportunity to listen, learn, and take action. Now, you can join me every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, where I will have a wonderful lineup of experts who will share resources, stories, and answer your burning genealogy questions. All of my guests share a deep passion and knowledge of genealogy and history. If you have logged in as a guest and wish to participate in the chat, you can sign in through your Facebook account or Blog Talk Radio. Following the show, you can continue this discussion on the DNA forum of Afrogenius.com. Also, all of my shows are available as a podcast immediately after the broadcast, and you can also download the show from iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. Well, tonight's topic will focus on ancestry, health, and DNA. So, what can your DNA tell you about your ancestry and health? Do you have DNA results and don't know how to interpret them? Has your DNA results revealed any surprises? Well, my guest tonight, Dr. Joanna Mountain, who is the Senior Director of Research for 23andMe, will answer some of those questions. She joined 23andMe in 2007 as a senior member of the research team. Dr. Mountain's professional and research interests include the patterns of genetic etiology across a broad range of human traits, the prehistory, underlying human genetic diversity, and the nature of the relationship between genetic diversity and categories of race and ethnicity. Joanna has been awarded multiple grants from the National Science Foundation and the National Institutes of Health and has published over 40 papers in the field of human genetics. She also spent 2 years as a Peace Corps volunteer teaching at a community school near the Kenyan coast and continues to be particularly interested in the genetic diversity of Africa. She earned her Ph.D. in genetics and a B.S. in mathematical sciences, both from Stanford, and conducted postdoctoral research on human evolutionary genetics at the University of California in Berkeley. Now, this show is divided in three parts. Part one, we're going to focus on just coming up with that common vocabulary. Part two, we're going to focus on interpreting results. And then part three is going to focus on the Roots into the Future program. Now, Dr. Mountain, I am so pleased that she's on this line right now. And so welcome, Dr. Mountain, to Research at the National Archives and Beyond.
Bernice, I'm very happy to be here and looking forward to our conversation.
Well, I am too, so let's just start. Well, first of all, please share with the listeners why you are particularly interested in the genetic diversity of Africa.
Well, as a Peace Corps volunteer, I spent over 2 years in Kenya and was fascinated by the language diversity there, by the cultural diversity just in that one country. It's very rich in those two areas. And I was just wondering what was the history underlying all that diversity. You know, people speaking very, very different languages, having quite different cultural practices, and even having physical differences across the country. So I came back to the United States, to California, and met a geneticist who was studying genetic diversity. And I thought, wow, could we study people genetically and figure out if what that tells us about the other dimensions of human diversity? Like, why did people speak so many really different languages and yet they live in neighboring villages? How did that come to be? And so I got drawn into studying genetics because I had all these questions really about human nature and human history.
Well, that sounds like an interesting way to just kind of get into something, too, and to really recognize that you were in Kenya and you saw the diversity. So it's just wonderful. Well, since we are talking about the company that you're working for right now, 23andMe, what are most of the individuals interested in when they test with 23andMe? Is it health or is it ancestry?
Well, we are surprised when we ask that question because I think it's over 90% of people say they really are interested in both. But when you say, well, what do you really like the best? It's probably a little over half at least will say health, but a really large fraction, maybe a little under a half, will say ancestry. So we know that most people are interested in both. And in fact, they come in with an interest in one, and they go, wow, I had no idea about, you know, I thought I came in to learn about health, but the ancestry stuff is really interesting. Or they come in for the ancestry and they learn something about their health that just is really valuable to them. So really it's such a new area that, you know, people often, they just don't know what they're going to find out or what they're going to find interesting. And we have a very curious set of customers, and we have such a personalized service that everyone learns something.
Yes, and I can just imagine. Well, some of the listeners that are online right now probably have a good understanding of DNA. But then again, some of them may not. So what I'd like to do is make certain that we're all speaking the same language. So in this first half of the show, let's just focus on just some of the vocabulary or some of the words that we hear all the time. For example, what are the different types of DNA?
That's a great question. And you know, we wouldn't really even try to break down the types of DNA except that each of these types that I'll explain help us understand a different part of our ancestry, and that's kind of cool. So that's why we break them down into these categories. So one of the parts of our genome, so that our, if we think of our genome as made up of, it's really, you know, all the DNA combined makes up our genome, and the DNA is organized into chromosomes, which are just long stretches, long molecules of DNA. And you can think of DNA as this long string of letters, A, C, T, and G. Mm-hmm. So we have these long strands of DNA that we call chromosomes. And there's one of them, it's actually a little round loop of a chromosome, so it's a circle of DNA. It is inherited from our mothers. So all of us have inherited this a loop of DNA called mtDNA or mitochondrial DNA from our mothers. And because of that, we know it traces back. The DNA you have, your mother had, her mother had, your maternal great-great-grandmother had. So we can trace, if we can learn something about that DNA, we know it tells us something about that maternal great-great-great-grandmother. And so that's one of the categories of DNA. There's another chromosome, Y DNA, the Y chromosome, that boys inherit from their fathers. Mm-hmm. So we pay particular attention to that when we're interested in following that paternal line. And so it's kind of like a surnames, it, you know, that are inherited for the most part from father to child, but it traces very directly that paternal line backwards in time from a boy to his father, to his father's father, and his father's father's father, and so on. And that's the Y chromosome, or Y DNA.
Okay.
Now, if you think about it, those two pieces of those two chromosomes, the Y chromosome and the mitochondrial DNA, they only capture two of your grandparents. They capture your mother's mother and your father's father. But you have two other grandparents in there, your mother's father and your father's mother. And fortunately, you got DNA from them as well. And that the DNA that we get in 22 pairs of chromosomes that we call sometimes call the autosomes, that DNA comes from all four grandparents, including those ones that are not that did not hand down the Y DNA or the mitochondrial DNA. So we have DNA from all four grandparents, all eight great-grandparents, and so on. We study each type of DNA to trace ancestry of these different ancestors. So, we look at the DNA for each of these chromosomes, and we learn by studying people all over the world, we learn which sequences of the DNA, sequences of those letters, A, C, T, and G, trace back to different parts of the world. And that's really the magic of genetic genealogy, is you can look at someone's DNA and say, aha, I know that traces back to the mother's mother's mother, and I know that if we were to go back 500 years ago before everyone was moving about with boats and planes and so on, most people with that particular sequence were living in Gabon or Siberia or South America. So, you know, we can really start to get a story out of each part of the DNA.
Now, I already have a question coming out of the chat, and this is a person who wants point of clarification. Is genome a DNA package, so to speak?
Exactly. That's one way to think about it. It's just a short way of saying all of your DNA. Now, every single cell has a genome in it. You have actually multiple genomes. Every cell has chromosomes 1 to 22 and then an X and a Y chromosome. I didn't mention the X chromosome, and I will jump in here and say that's part of the genome as well.
Okay.
It's inherited from each boy gets one X to go with his Y, and each girl gets two X's, which is, you know, that's really what makes us boys and girls. And so when we look at the X chromosome and the DNA in that chromosome, for boys we know it traces through their mother. For girls, the X traces back to the father and the mother. So each of these types of DNA gives us hints about particular lineages in our family tree. So yes, the genome is a way of just saying all of your DNA that's packaged into a cell, all of these chromosomes, if you put them all together, we call it the genome.
And so what you're saying, though, about the X, if a male matches someone on the X chromosome, he got that from his mother.
That's right. So it's on the mother's side.
Okay. So let's continue this discussion about chromosomes and SNPs and DNA segments. Okay, so tell us more.
Sure. So those are words we use to describe some of the DNA. Chromosomes are these long strings. And they can be millions of base pairs long or millions of letters long. Those chromosomes are inherited. You inherit one from your father and one from your mother, and that's really important to keep in mind, with the exception of the Y chromosome and the mitochondrial DNA that I mentioned before. But if you go back to the grandparent generation, each generation, the chromosome 1, for example, is parts of it are swapped around so that when you get your DNA chromosome from your mother, it has DNA from both of her parents, so both of your grandparents on that side. So it's like a patchwork. So think of when you get your chromosome 1, it has from your mother, it has both her parents' DNA in there. You get your chromosome 1 from your father, and it has both of his parents' DNA in there. So you're really, chromosome 1, you have two copies, and you get all four grandparents packaged in there in little segments. So we use the term segment to mean any part of a chromosome. Usually it's not a very long segment, but it can be any length that's smaller than a chromosome.
Mm-hmm.
And one reason we talk about segments is because you may share, you share a whole genome with your mother, in a sense. You share a chromosome 1 with her, a chromosome 2, all the way up to the X, and you share mitochondrial DNA with her. You share virtually a whole genome with your father, except you don't have the Y if you're female.
Mm-hmm.
And you did not get his mitochondrial DNA, but basically you share, you know, a genome with your mother, a genome with your father, and but other relatives you don't share quite you share parts of a genome, and so, you know, maybe a few segments of the genome or a chromosome or even just one. Now it's fascinating to look at two siblings,
mm-hmm.
And I believe you've had a chance to do that.
Yes.
Yourself, and I have been able to do that too. And because of the inheritance of chromosomes 1 to 22, sometimes you share both copies of, let's say, part of chromosome 1 with a sibling, and sometimes you don't share any copies of a particular part. You're just like strangers compared.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of makes sense. When you think about you and your siblings, some ways you're so similar, and some ways you're just, you know, just different.
Yes.
And the DNA pattern of sharing, to me, it just explains that. And I'm just fascinated by this sharing between close relatives. Now, if you get to how much you shared a few segments with cousins, first cousins you will share quite a few segments. Second, just because you happen to inherit the DNA from the same grandparents,
mm-hmm.
and if you were looking at second cousins, you'd be sharing DNA because you inherited it from the same great-grandparents, and
mm-hmm.
so on. So, but as you go further and further out in your family tree, you share fewer and fewer of these identical segments where you basically have the same letter sequence for that long stretch of DNA as your cousin.
Okay. So how, I mean, let's say you see a cousin, and that cousin shares a small segment on chromosome 2 and chromosome 10. They're still a cousins regardless of the size of the segment, or does the size make a difference?
It's both the size and the number. If it's a close cousin, like first or second cousin, you'll share many segments, including some longer ones.
Okay.
If it's a distant cousin, like a fifth cousin or sixth cousin, then you may only share one just by chance. You just didn't happen to inherit the same things from that common ancestor. So it's more meaningful if you have more segments and they are longer. We've done simulations to study how long these segments are for particular types of relatives. And we discovered that for people who share a segment of the minimum length of 7 million base pairs, or 7 million letters identically. So that's,
mm-hmm.
we call it centimorgans. That's
mm-hmm.
not necessarily a term you need to remember, but that's what it's called scientifically. But it's about 7 million positions. If you're identical with somebody at 7 million positions in a row, that's a, you know, shared segment, then you have a common ancestor going back, you know, a few generations. It gets hard to predict how close that relationship is, but it's probably within the last, you know, 200 or 300 years.
But seven cms is the key. If anything less than that, then they're not related.
The way I view the world as a geneticist, we're all related. It's just a matter of how far back.
Okay.
So you know, if you can define, we call close relatives up to about first cousins, and then we have, you know, more distant relatives, And then you have people, you're just as related to them as you are to anyone else in your community. So if you share 5 centimorgans, it's just a, more of a hint of a close, you know, a relationship in the last, say, 10 generations, but it's more suggestive than proof. So it's, you know, there's a boundary in there, but I personally, when I see 2 segments I share with somebody, I take it more seriously.
Okay.
And especially 2 longer segments, at least.
Now, there's a question coming out of the chat. What do non-geneticists learn when they share genomes?
So one of the interesting things that 23andMe did was enable people to share their genetic information, which, you know, nobody knew if anyone would want to share. And what happens, it depends on who you're sharing with. If you're sharing with a relative, it can help you understand your own family. For instance, I share with my mother, and I see what I inherited, or what my, especially I share with my children and my mother, I can see what my children inherited from my mother. So if you have share with family members, you can kind of see how things are inherited, and that can be very interesting. If you share with friends, you just get to see, hey, I'm like them, you know, in one way, and I'm different from them in another way, and you just get to understand how similar and different you are to other people. And it kind of puts it into context to see how you compare with others.
Now, there's another question coming out, and it's back to this whole segment size. What if 2 people share multiple 5 CMs? Is that by chance, or are they related in some way?
If it's multiple, if it's 3 or 4, I would start to take it quite seriously because, you know, first of all, we're estimating the length of these shared segments, and this is something that no one had done before 23andMe did it, right? So we are at the cutting edge, and so we may not be estimating it absolutely precisely. It may actually be 6 centimorgans or 4.5. So it's really worth, you know, following up. If you see that you share 5 centimorgans with someone, I would definitely think it will be worth following up. If it's more than 3 of those. But we haven't explored all possible combinations, and it's a little hard to tell how close that relationship would be, let's say with 4 segments of 5 centimorgans, what that would mean.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's continue this discussion with our common vocabulary and talk about haplogroups. What is a haplogroup?
Well, that's a scientific term, and it's related to those 2 parts of the genome that go back through the mother's 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 line. That's the mitochondrial DNA. Mm-hmm. And the Y chromosome that goes back along the father's 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 line. So let's focus on the mother's 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 line because everybody has that. And if you think of every living person in the world and you follow the line back through all their mothers, you come to a common ancestor.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine all those lines tracing back make kind of a tree, with the root at the top. And what people have done is they've given names to not necessarily every branch in that tree, that upside down tree, but every but groups of them, of related lineages. So you and your sister and brother have the same line, but you and your 5th cousin, where you're both connected through mother's and mother's mother's lines, you would also have what we call the same haplogroup, possibly. And so these are related lineages in this maternal family tree.
Okay.
And so the scientists have given some of those lineages names. But just to help us describe, you know, and figure out the histories of each of those lineages. And the truth is that many of these haplogroups, these families of maternal lines really are rooted in one part of the world. And so we scientists all over the world have studied these maternal lines, and they've said, aha, the one we gave the name E1B1 traces just to this one part of the world. So they've studied that, and 23andMe compiled all that information and has created maps and the histories to help people understand their maternal ancestry.
Now, I noticed that you have actually identified three population groups when you define or share what the haplogroup was for. One was African, European, and Asian ancestry. So give us an idea of a typical maternal DNA haplogroup for African, European, and Asian, so we can understand what you're talking about.
Sure. The L4B is a fairly typical lineage that traces back to Africa if we go far enough far back in time, where that was in the past was restricted to Africa. So L0D is a lineage that's found mostly in southern Africa, and that's a lineage that Desmond Tutu has.
Uh-huh.
You asked also about other regions of the world. If we were looking at Asia, there's a haplogroup we call M8A, and Christy Yamaguchi is someone who has that particular haplogroup, which traces back to Asia.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have, there's some lineages that trace pretty much exclusively back to the Americas, meaning indigenous Native Americans. So one of those haplogroups is called A2, and Eva Longoria is someone with that particular lineage. But I should note that my husband also has that lineage, and he's from South Carolina. He did not know of any Native American ancestry, but it turns out that he probably, his DNA indicates that he has that ancestry on his mother's side. And so his DNA prompted him to do the genealogical research to figure out where that Native American ancestry might have come into play. And he thinks it's back about 8 or 9 generations.
Uh-huh.
And so his deep ancestry in South Carolina shows up via that Native American maternal line. And for Europe, the haplogroup called H is very common. About 50% of women, I think, have haplogroup H if they have European maternal ancestry. And my haplogroup is called H10A1, and there are a few hundred people in the 23andMe database who have that particular lineage, and it sounds like many of us come from England and other parts of the British Isles, but even some from Eastern Europe. So we're trying to figure out really the history of our particular family's lineage, and so that's those are some examples of some maternal lines, and they just tell us a little bit about that part of our ancestry.
Right. Okay. What about the same for the paternal haplogroups?
So if we trace Y chromosomes back, one example of one that traces back to Africa is B2A1, and Chris Rock is someone who has that particular lineage. For Native Americans, there's a lineage called C3B, and it's found particularly in the Americas, it meaning among Native Americans. So in Europe, there is one lineage that there were some very successful man and his very successful sons and grandsons. They seem to have a lot of kids. That lineage is called R1B1B2. In 23andMe's framework, sometimes it gets a different label. But it's very, very common for people with any European ancestry on their paternal line. One of the discoveries in recent years, if we look at Asia, is that the C3 lineage was possibly the lineage of Genghis Khan, famous character from history who possibly fathered many children as well. So really we're seeing the with a Y chromosome, we're seeing the success of some men and their sons at certain points in history.
Interesting. Well, now I noticed that ancestry is noted for each haplogroup. So where does that information come from?
Good question. So we had a team of people at 23andMe who went through the scientific literature, because a lot of this is reported by people who study each part of the world. They'll go to Siberia, or they'll go to Western France, or they'll go to any part of the world, and they'll get DNA samples from the local people, and they'll say, what haplogroup did these people have? And then they'll publish that. So what we did is we put together a database saying, aha, all the people in this area have this haplogroup, and so on. And so we pulled that information together and wrote up the histories that are part of our service today.
And now, could haplogroup results actually differ from one DNA company to another?
So there are ideally they don't, and very often they're the same. But they can differ depending on how much of the DNA each company tests. And
okay.
In the early days, companies looked at just a few positions in the DNA, and they took a guess, you know, or their best educated guess at what the haplogroup was. And more recently, 23andMe and other companies look at more of the DNA, let's say for the mitochondrial DNA, and get a better estimate of which the haplogroup is. And I actually investigated your personal story a little bit and discovered that you have a couple of variants in your mitochondrial DNA that
mm-hmm.
lead to ambiguity that you could be, I think it's either L4B or L3, or L3E2. So
mm-hmm.
there were two variants that suggested L3E2, but when we look at four other positions, but it turns out that those two variants are also found in a subset of L4Bs, and you have four or five other positions that indicate that you have the lineage L4B. And so it's really a matter of getting more information and getting a more solid result.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to ask you just a few more questions, and then we're going to take a break. Okay?
Okay.
I noticed that 23andMe is currently making upgrades. And so there's some concern about the upgrades. And so could you explain what are the implications of these upgrades? And the second part of that question is, will anyone lose a relative with this new upgrade?
Okay, so I'll speak generally about upgrades. 23andMe is always looking for ways to improve our service. And we do that by developing new features, by improving our methods. And what we did, one thing we've done recently is the way that the genome is numbered, the positions are numbered, was changed by the outside scientific community recently. And they have a version number, and they used to have version number 36, and now they're on version number 37. So we made some changes to match with that latest update, latest version, and that really it has changed the numbering of the positions. It doesn't really change the data, it just where the different positions that 23andMe analyzes, because 23andMe looks at 1 million positions, but your
mm-hmm.
whole genome is 3 billion.
Okay.
So we don't look at all the positions. So we identify a position, you know, out of those 3 billion. Each one of our little tests looks at one of those, and we call those SNPs or markers. And each one of those is scattered across this landscape of 3 billion. And so they have to have a position number. And so we've updated that. Now, it shouldn't make too much difference for anybody. It may change people's chromosome paintings, if anybody's familiar with those, a tiny little bit. it may make a little bit of difference in terms of relatives that people share segments with, but no one has had any changes made to their relative finder list based on this upgrade yet. So that has not happened yet. Now, that is should happen within a couple weeks or so, and at that point, you may see some changes, but let me explain what that's doing.
Okay.
If there, for most part, the list of, you know, the relatives that 23andMe predicts will be the same. However, there may be cases where we originally said, aha, you share a 7-centimorgan segment with this person, but under the new repositioning of some of the markers, it might turn out to be 6.9 centimorgans.
Okay?
Okay. So it won't show up anymore because we have this cutoff. Now, but that cutoff is not perfect. We haven't. It may, you know, it's the relationship hasn't changed. It's 6.9 versus 7 is not really so different, and so. We don't want people to feel like just because they aren't within that set of more than 7 centimorgans that there's suddenly there's no relationship there. It's really shouldn't be something that if you're already connected with somebody and you know you share a segment, it's probably very close to 7 centimorgans. It just might not meet that cutoff.
Oh, okay, because there is someone in the chat saying that they've lost 2 relatives.
Okay.
So basically you're saying they didn't lose the 2 relatives.
Well, they should check with our customer service team because there may be other explanations for that. I'm not sure what that would be, but it's definitely worth checking with our customer service team to see if that it makes any sense, you know, see what the explanation for that is.
Okay, and then one more question, and then we're definitely going on a break.
Okay.
You have Asia. Now, should some interpret that Asia ancestry as Native American, or just what would they make of that?
Yeah, so we estimate percentages of ancestry from different continental regions, and when we actually have the reference populations we use are from Asia, but because Native American DNA is somewhat similar to Asia, what is picked up as most closely related to Asia can be Native American instead. And so for Latino individuals and African American individuals, very typically the Asian estimate is reflective of Native American ancestry.
Okay. Well, with that, we are going to take a break. Break everybody in the chat room, and you continue to chat, and we'll come back in a minute. At the National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett, and you have been listening to Dr. Joanna Mountain, Senior Director of Research for 23andMe. Well, before we go into the next phase, or next part of our talk, interpreting your results, I do have a question, Dr. Mountain. This question basically focuses on an individual of African ancestry who has a Y DNA and a mtDNA haplogroups of European origin, and would like to know how could he determine his African ancestral homeland when that's what his maternal and paternal haplogroups are. Basically, they're European.
Yes, okay. That's a wonderful question, and the kind of question I love to think about because it's a hard one. So what the Y-DNA is just tracing that one lineage through the father's 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 line, and the mitochondrial DNA is just tracing that one lineage. So you're really only capturing the ancestry for two of your great-grandparents, two of your great-great-grandparents, and so on. So how to get the African ancestry? And the hope for that lies in the chromosomes 1 to 22 and the X. And so at this stage, we're just getting into that. So 23andMe did another groundbreaking thing by inventing something we call Ancestry Finder, and that's where we compare parts of your chromosomes 1 up to 22 to people around the world, kind of like the haplogroups for Y and mitochondrial DNA. But it's a little different. So we take segments, let's say from chromosome 3, and we say, aha, you have a segment here that's shared with someone in Nigeria. And if that person's ancestry is all, if your cousin's ancestry is deep in Nigeria, that person's family has been in Nigeria for generations, that is suggestive that you have ancestry tracing back to Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And so this is very cutting edge. And the more people we bring in to 23andMe who are from Africa themselves, who have all their ancestors from one place in Africa, the more we will be able to tell African Americans about where their African ancestry lies. So this is something where I have a lot of hope. We're just starting to see that a few of our customers are finding that they have connections to Ghana or Nigeria or Senegal. And so we're really starting to see that in the chromosomes 1 to 22 and the X. Is that helpful?
Yes, it's helpful. And the person is in the chat, so if they have additional questions or if they want additional clarification, I hope that they'll put something else in the chat.
And, I'll just follow up on that. In the early days of genetic genealogy, testing companies only looked at the mitochondrial DNA and the Y DNA. And for some people, it was a little bit of a shock, like, where's my African ancestry? Mm-hmm. And so Skip Gates is someone who is in that position, and he was frustrated until he got his DNA from the rest of his chromosomes, which show his African ancestry. So it's really because of the breakthroughs in the last 5 years or so that we can start finding that the rest of the ancestry.
The rest of it. Well, let's go on to part two. And for those people who have their results right in front of them, Dr. Mountain, what I'd like you to do is to really give us a recommendation as to how we would go about analyzing our DNA results. And feel free to use my results, my ancestry results, just to share how do you interpret what you see.
Right. So I'm always looking for ways to help people with this. And one thing we introduced recently was what we call our ancestry dashboard. And if you you can click on the blue letters that say My Ancestry, and that's where we give you some of the highlights of your ancestry, including the percentages of your ancestry from different continental regions. We give you your maternal line haplogroup. If you're male, we'll give you the paternal line as well, and we'll tell you the surnames that come up in your relatives, your DNA relatives. So we try to summarize the highlights on that page just to give you a start. And from that page, you can click onto any of those boxes and find out more with our more in-depth features. But that page gives you the highlights. And
okay.
We're always looking for ways to improve that, but that's a great place to start. And I always encourage people to start with the ancestry because the health results actually are dependent on ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've noticed that already.
So
once you've had looked through the ancestry and you can say, aha, that matches what I think, or wow, that's something I never knew about. We have lots of people discovering that they have, like my husband, that have a little bit of Native American ancestry, or people discovering they have some Jewish ancestry or some African ancestry when they thought that all their ancestry was European. So we have a number of people do get some surprises, and our customers are generally the curious type who love to see these surprises. So that's the first thing to do. And then I encourage people to go to the page called My Health, and that's where you see the highlights of your health DNA results. And we've broken it down into four different categories, including whether or not you carry variants that are linked to diseases where you have to have two copies of the variant to really have the disease, like for cystic fibrosis or Tay-Sachs or sickle cell anemia. So those require two copies, and we tell people if they have one or more copies of that. And that's just useful for people just to know that they carry something, and if their partner carries it as well, then they will have their children. It just gives them the heads up that their children may have a particular disease. They will have a 1 in 4 chance. So that's one part of the results we show. And Bernice, you don't carry anything in those of the 48 that we test for. And we also, something very valuable to some people who are taking particular medications like blood thinners, we have a section that says that will predict how well you'll respond to those and based on your DNA. And so if you're not taking something now, but your doctor says, oh, I think you should start taking a blood thinner such as warfarin, you might want to say, aha, my DNA suggests that I am very hypersensitive to that or less sensitive than average, and then that way your doctor will know how to start you on the medication. So this is just the beginning of what's called personalized medicine, where your doctor works with you to understand what's best for you based on not just your DNA, but your DNA and other factors. What's best for you in terms of a treatment or medication.
Right. Now, I want to go back for a second, just back to the whole ancestry. You mentioned going to the ancestry and you can get an overview of your mother's line. Is that right?
If you do click on My Ancestry, it's your overall ancestry.
It's your overall ancestry.
Yes.
Okay, so for example, if my ancestry said East Africa for my maternal, but
okay,
then there's another link, and that link says something about Central Africa, what is that, a further differentiation of where that particular line could have come from?
That's right. So let's.
So is it not a discrepancy?
Oh, okay. So your My Ancestry overview says Central
it's
Africa.
Not mine in particular, but someone in the chat has raised this as a issue. That when they look at the leading the page entitled Ancestry Overview, your
right.
mother's line, it states in a pertinent part, your mother's line was likely in Eastern Africa 50,000 years ago. And today that line is still found primarily in Africa. However, there's a hyperlink, and it
yes.
says your maternal line held from Central Africa nearly 60,000 years ago.
Okay. So the 50 to 60 is the 60,000 probably tells the age of the haplogroup. The location is more recent.
Okay. Okay.
So the 60,000 is referring to the overall age of when that common ancestor lived of all the people with that lineage, and that may very well have been in Eastern Africa at that time, but then that group of people moved into Central Africa at some point.
Okay.
Yes. So the time estimates are a little difficult back there, and a little rough, but that's just the general idea that the age, some of these, and there's even debate about whether whether our ancestry traces back to Eastern or Southern Africa 50 to 60,000 years ago. And even, the 50 is our best guess at when our common ancestors, all of us trace back common ancestors to either Eastern or Southern Africa. And there's still a lot of debate amongst scientists about whether our ancestors were in Eastern Africa or Southern Africa. But our best guess, I think a majority of scientists still think Eastern, but even some of the work I've done is suggests Southern. So it's something still up in the air. And we'd love to be more precise, but without a time machine, it's a little tricky.
Right. It is a little tricky. You're right. Now, you didn't get into, and I really haven't asked you so much about relative finder, because you tell us a little bit more about the part of the report that tells us who our relatives are.
Yes. So we figured out, some of my colleagues at 23andMe figured out at some point that, wow, we can figure out what DNA segments you share with someone, and why don't we try to understand what that sharing means? So we did some studies and some simulations, and we figured out that if you share a certain fraction of your genome with another person where it's identical across a long, long stretch of millions of positions, then you are likely to be second cousins or third cousins or fourth cousins. And so we built this feature to help people connect with those cousins, and we've had many, many people connect and find new relatives. Not everybody, does it right away, and sometimes it happens after being a member for 3 or 4 years, but a good friend of mine just discovered a second cousin that, he didn't really know that side of the family, that corner of the family, and uh-huh. He discovered a cousin through 23andMe. And so it's really been quite successful. Again, it's something no one else had ever done, no company had ever done before, so we're always looking to improve it and improve the experience. But I like to call them our DNA cousins. You have mm-hmm. many cousins, but you don't share DNA with all of them just because DNA is inherited in kind of a lumpy way. You get chunks of a chromosome from someone, and you just might not happen to get the same pieces, the same segments that your cousin did, your, let's say, third cousin, and you might end up sharing no DNA that's detectable with a third cousin just by chance, though often third cousins do share a couple of segments or more. So we built this method to predict the degree of relationship for people who share these long segments of DNA. And so many 23andMe customers have hundreds, if not 1,000 people who are in the 23andMe database who are predicted to be their relatives.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, this is a question of how should one evaluate the information presented under Relative Finder in comparison to the information under the genome-wide comparison?
Yes, so they're using the same information. If it says two segments in Relative Finder, you should see two segments in the genome-wide comparison. That should be consistent. Sometimes we use different terminology. Instead of centimorgan, we use megabases, which is a million bases or a million DNA letters. So both of those terms are about the same. But it will say that someone is half identical for a segment. Now, that's because for any stretch of the genome, let's just say part of chromosome 6, you have two copies, and you only share DNA for one of those copies with your cousin. Uh-huh. Only siblings can share both copies for a particular segment because they have the same parents. So we say you're half identical because you just share one of the two copies with your cousin.
So what would make a person a third cousin versus a fifth cousin based upon the segments and the centimorgans?
We actually have a publication on that, and maybe I can send you that information. You could put it up for your listeners at a later point.
Okay.
Where we go into the details of how we came up with the method to make that prediction. But we're always careful to say we're not 100% sure. It's somewhere between third and fifth or fourth and sixth cousin. It's not a very precise prediction.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it's just really a matter of, you know, if you share more segments or larger segments, we'll say it's likely to be a third cousin. If it's only one or two, we'll say fifth or distant cousin.
Okay. So let me see. When we're looking at our ancestral painting results, how do we make sense of the percentage breakdown, the relative to what you know about your own pedigree?
Very often we don't know our whole ancestry. For instance, I know a lot about my father's line. Many people track mostly the father's lines because it's easier with the surname, right? So I know something about the mountain line more than I know about my mother's line. Partly they change surnames every generation along the mother's line in many cases. And so, you know, we don't know all. Often people don't even know. They may know the four grandparents, but they may not know the names of the eight great-grandparents. And so sometimes the DNA holds some surprises for people. And, you know, we are always looking for ways to improve the method. So we may get more accurate results, and those may end up being more like what people know their ancestry to be. But so there may be discrepancies for different reasons between what people know about their ancestry and what the DNA predicts.
Okay. Now, I just have to make an announcement, and this is for anyone in the chat. I'm getting word that there's some inappropriate comments being made in the chat, and we do have strict rules. Certainly being courteous is one of those rules, and so if you're not willing to abide by the rules, please remove yourself from the chat. Thank you. I'd like to open the floor for just a few seconds for anyone who would like to call in and ask a question of you. Are you okay for that?
That sounds great.
Okay, so the call-in number is 646-200-0491. Press 1 if you would like to speak to the host, and that'll give you an opportunity to ask a question. That number is 646-200-0491 if you would like to make a comment or ask a question. And so while we're waiting for anyone to call in, do you have any more to help us understand how to interpret the results that we would receive?
So we're adding new tools to help people understand the results. One thing we added recently was a way to just look at all the surnames that your relative finder, your DNA cousins have. And for some people, that they go, wow, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We now have a map where you can see where your DNA cousins live or where their families are from. And we're just adding a feature where if you have your a parent in the 23andMe membership, and you link to them, we can tell you whether your DNA cousin is on your mother's side or your father's side.
So, oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so that's something that I think went live today. As I said, we're always looking for ways to make improvements. And so that's something you have to be sharing with that individual and connect them in your family tree so that our computers know who's your – I mean, we do know who your – we can probably predict who your mother is, but we need you to confirm that. But it is a nice new tool we have, and that's just something that I thought your listeners might be interested in.
Oh, yes, and there's a question. Where would they find that?
If you go to Relative Finder and across the top bar, there's now a new little place that says both sides, and you can click there and choose to have it. It'll give you instructions on how to get put in place the relationship information so that you can figure out the relatives on each side of the family. But you do, I should point out, you do have to have at least one parent in there. So for me, I can do that. I have my mother in the membership, so I was able to do that earlier today, and even to check to see, if the people on her side were from Ireland, and that kind of thing. Just you can start doing some more exploring, more than you could do before.
Right. And then I have another question, and this question relates to the paternal line. If the father is deceased and the brother is deceased, can a nephew be tested?
So a nephew, if the nephew is through a brother, that will work. That is,
okay.
If it is your brother's son, that will work. Or a paternal uncle will work, which is what I had to do. I had to send a kid all the way to New Zealand to get my paternal line. I had one remaining person who, paternal uncle, who could give me that information. So sometimes even if you don't have a father or a brother available, there are other relatives. But as long as it's connected through a chain of males, that will work.
That will work. Well, I do have two people ready to ask a question, and I'm going to call out your area code, and when I do, then you can come on board. The first person is area code 972. 972? Hello?
Yes. Hi, Bernice.
Hello.
Hi, how are you? This is
okay.
This is a fascinating show. Thanks to you. This is Barbara in Dallas. And thanks to both you and to Dr. Mountain. I have a couple of questions. I did the DNA testing through 23andMe, and my maternal haplogroup is L3E1. And so I'm just, I'm looking at Africa, the maternal lines, present-day Mozambique. What can you tell me about that particular haplogroup to help me to understand my African ancestry? And my other question is, when I do look at, I guess I'm not sure which tab it is, but where you get the percentages, what can I learn from this about the percentages in terms of the European and the Asian?
Okay.
Because mine says 5% Asian, 40% African, 55% European. So
okay.
I'll just listen.
Sure. I'll follow up on your question about the maternal line. And L3E1 is quite an interesting lineage. We know a bit about that one. And
but where you get the percentage.
So the L3.
About.
Sorry, I'm not catching all of that. I thought there was one question about the maternal line and one question about the percentages.
There were two questions
okay.
that the She did. And by the way, anyone, when you call in, lower the sound on your computer so that we don't get an echo. Because the next person who I will have a question from is area code 510. So I'll let Dr. Mountain answer the first question, and then I'll bring the second person on.
Okay, so the question about L3E1, what we know from the distribution in Africa of this lineage, it is most commonly found in Mozambique. And because of our understanding of the slave trade and in timing of the slave trade and so on, we know about 1 million people were brought from Mozambique. It's very likely that this lineage that your maternal line traces back to Mozambique. So that is something where one of the lineages where we know more precisely where in Africa it comes from. Now, the percentages of ancestry are independent of that, because those percentages trace all of your ancestors, all of your grandparents, all your great-grandparents, all your great-great-grandparents contribute to those percentages, whereas the L3E1 maternal line just traces the mother's 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 line. So we know that your mother's 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 line traces back to probably Mozambique, but others of your ancestors, if you go back, say, 10 generations ago or 20 generations ago, a few hundred years ago, they were living in Europe. Many were living in Europe, and many were living probably in different parts of Africa as well. At this point, it's hard to say exactly where in Africa, but we're working on ways to give you more detail on that. I hope that helps.
Okay, thank you very much. I've just opened the line for area code 510.
Hi, Bernice. It's Jolie
Pearl. Hello, Jolie.
And, I'm really enjoying the show, and thank you to Dr. Mountain. It's a wonderful show. I'm learning a lot. And you and I have discovered that we are related. I'm not sure exactly what cousin level we are, but perhaps about six generations ago, and we're on a quest to figure out exactly where our ancestors crossed paths, and 23andMe is helping with that. I'm just hoping that we can get a couple of tips from Dr. Mountain about how to do that. And there are also a couple of other people in the 23andMe database who are with whom we match in the same little segment on chromosome 1. And, one question I have is, we've been fortunate to be able to connect with people, find a couple of people in this one chromosome, but there must be others out there as well. And, I'm just wondering if there's some way to query the database to find them, or is
That's
it just kind of a hit and miss thing?
I think you're doing the right thing now by looking for people who share that segment. One thing we're trying to do, we may be able to, as we think of new ways to improve our service, help people characterize each of their segments in terms of where those relatives are. We're doing that a little bit with the Ancestry Finder feature, but there may be ways we can help you do what you're doing kind of in a more manual way now, do it in a more automated way. So, I think you're doing, you need to be doing there, looking at that particular segment, which is, I believe, was inherited from a European ancestor, as you say, six or so generations ago, and there may be ways to figure out, where that ancestor might have lived by looking at the geography of all the people who share those segments. So,
right.
I wish you luck with that.
Well, thank you.
You.
And thank you so much for calling in, Jolie. I mean, it's very interesting that many of the African Americans who've tested are certainly seeing that they have European DNA cousins. And so with Jolie, we identified, I mean, she's 100% European, yet I showed up as a match, as well as she mentioned two other people. So we're really hoping that we will be able to figure out who that common ancestor is. The next caller is from area code 443. You have a question or a comment?
Yes. Good evening, Bernice.
Good evening.
And good evening, Dr. Mountain. This is Angela Walton Raji. And I have a question. First of all, one very simple, basic question. I think some people know more about DNA than I regarding segments. And I just want, first of all, a quick, simple or simplified definition of a segment. As I look at my 23andMe results and I look at the ancestral painting, is the segment, the part on those chromosome lines that there's a break in that line, and the one on the left is a segment and the one on the right is a segment? If not, what is a segment? I hear people talking about it. It means nothing
yep.
to me.
That, so the chromosomal painting, the ancestry painting, shows segments. Those are, it can be any size, but it, yes, those colorful pieces we call segments. Now, if you go to the compared genes.
Uh-huh. You mean where you compare yourself to another person?
Right. Or family inheritance, actually, is the way to do it. If you compare yourself to one of your DNA relatives, your genetic relatives, you will see things that are in the light blue color, and those are segments as well. So it's really any part of a chromosome.
So it's not a segment is just anything, any little strip, whether it's a dot
right.
or a long line. It does not okay. have to be some where the break is on each line, because I hear people saying that, well, what makes a segment is a segment a particular length. So I think I kind of understand what you've just said. You were going to say?
I was just going to say, they get really small, you know, if it's just a million positions long, which doesn't sound small, but it is in terms of inheritance, we might not call it a segment then. But, you know, whenever you see is something a visible stretch on these chromosome paintings or maps, then that's what we would call a segment, yes.
I see. Well, I get a report, for example, I'm just clicking on the person on Relative Finder whose name is directly under my name, and this person, it says he, I assume it's a gentleman, yes, it's a male, says he's third to fifth cousin, 73% shared over two segments. So that means that there are two different lines in which we'll have a little blue thing. Is that what that means?
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. And it's probably 0.73%. It's less than 1% probably.
And this person is the highest. He's the first name right under mine on the Relative Finder. Have no idea who this person is. He has no idea who I am. Now, I do have a known cousin. We've been cousins for years. She showed up on my list, and it says she's a third to sixth cousin, 22% shared over two segments. And obviously the little blue line is shorter. She is the fourth cousin, and the predicted relationship did come out accurately as fourth cousin, and we are fourth cousins, and we, you know, show up at family reunions, and we know that. But I guess my question is also beyond just the segments. There are people who, we have different groups online, and there's a gentleman, for example, who said, oh, you're matching my uncle and my cousin, I'm the administrator, send me your raw data, and I can figure out what side of the family you're from. I have no idea what that means. I'm interested in the story and the people and the stories that go with the people. And so that part of the science where we're sharing genomes and snips and snaps, that means nothing, you know, to those of us who are not geneticists.
Okay, thank you, Angela.
What do we do? What does that mean when we're sharing genomes?
Yeah. So what you're trying to do is uncover the stories. And it's easier for people who are more closely related if they share more segments because they're probably second cousins or third cousins, and it's easier to figure out that story, which is about how you're connected through your great-grandparents or your grandparents and so on. And so it is about people and stories, and that's the ultimate goal, is to figure out those stories. Unfortunately, we have to deal with all this technology and this genetics and all the terminology and everything to get there. So when that person says, I want to help you figure out which side of the family it's on, they're helping. They're trying to help tell the story. and now we have many customers who share their raw data with people outside, but it's something, it's a personal choice about whether to do that. Everybody has good intentions, but it's just something to think about carefully. And what we try to do is give you the tools on the website so that you can figure those things out. And that's something you should be able to do with this new part of the relative finder feature, where you can see which side a cousin is on if you have a parent who's been tested by 23andMe as well.
Okay, and we have one more question coming off area code 301. Do you have a question or a comment? Area code 301.
Yes, this is a fascinating program. Thank you so much, Bernice and Dr. Mountain. I have my 23andMe partial results. The relative finder results aren't in yet. But I have a question about Ancestry painting that page. Can you explain the different lengths in the 22 chromosomes that are on the Ancestry painting page?
Yes. So of many, many years ago, when people first could look at chromosomes under a microscope or otherwise, they realized that humans had 23 pairs of chromosomes, which is where the name 23andMe comes from, and they saw that they all had different lengths. And it turns out, so they named the longest one number one, and they named the second longest one number two, and so on. Though it gets a little confusing when they didn't do it quite right. There's one that's, the numbering doesn't quite follow the size. But the different lengths reflect the different actual lengths of the chromosome. So there's more DNA, there are more DNA letters in chromosome 1 than there are in chromosome 2 and so on. And chromosome 21 is actually the smallest, and it's relatively short, and there are fewer genes on that chromosome.
Thank you.
Okay, there's a question coming out of the chat, and they want to know, is there a definition of what each line of the chromosome represents? Is that a different person?
Okay, so each of us has these 20 chromosomes 1 to 22. So when you're looking at those lines, they are your lines. But for the Ancestry painting, I'm going to pull up Bernice's here. Each of those lines is information about Bernice, and it shows that her chromosome 1, much of it, almost all of it, traces back to Africa. There's one small stretch that she inherited that she shares with Jolie that traces back to Europe, and one stretch that is maybe traces back to Native Americans. And so that's, if this every piece of these chromosomes traces back through a line of ancestors, every little segment, went back through the mother's side or the father's side. Now, one of the tricky things is we show just one line for chromosome 1, but you actually have two chromosomes 1, chromosome 1s. And because we don't know how to split them into the father's and the mother's, we just show it as one line. But that's why sometimes there's a stripe of two colors, because maybe for part of chromosome 7, for instance, for Bernice, she has ancestry on chromosome 7 that traces one part, let's say her mother's side traces to Africa and the father's side traces to Europe. So it's these pictures are all reflective of the individual who's being tested, but we put colors on to indicate where that part of the chromosome goes back to or who it's related to and so on.
Okay. Well, now there's one more question coming out, and the big question is, are you going to come up with a book, 23andMe for Dummies?
That's a very good question, and we have talked about it quite seriously. I feel like, you know, there's so much more we could do to simplify this. It's not, you know, once people get a few basic concepts, it all becomes much more clear. And we know people really want to understand this because the more they understand, the more they get out of it, the better, you know, the easier it is to find those stories that we that we so crave. And so I think it's a great idea, and I will we'll be taking that back to our team and just encouraging everyone to think about doing that. The book, 23andMe for Dummies or DNA for Dummies, genetic genealogy for Dummies. Working to, and these, you know, the set of questions you brought up today, Bernice, are helping me think of the kinds of information we would want to include in such a book.
Okay, well, we're going to put them just a quick break and come back for the last part of our discussion tonight. National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio. Well, this is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett, and you have been listening to Dr. Joanna Mountain, Senior Director of Research for 23andMe. Well, the last part of our discussion tonight is the Roots into the Future program. So, Dr. Mountain, why the Roots into the Future program?
Well, this the reason for this program is just a fact of research and genetics research that what happened was we realized very quickly that the 23andMe health reports, often we didn't know if they were relevant for African Americans or for anybody who wasn't mostly of European ancestry, because 95% of research was done on in the past was done on people with European ancestry, and there were reasons for this. It wasn't all just bias. It was because the research was being done in Europe and on local people, but also the analysis was more simple, or is still more simple, if you look at people with ancestry just from one region. And many African Americans have ancestry tracing not just to one region in Africa, but to multiple regions in Africa and to other continents as well. So for African Americans, the genetic research you need more people to get the answers. And so not many studies had been done. There are a few, you know, there's been studies of prostate cancer and diabetes and so on. And so 23andMe does those reports. But we rebase our reports on published research. If there's no published research, then we can't put the reports out. So our CEO had this idea one day. She said, why don't we do something to solve this problem? Let's recruit 10,000 African Americans and do some of the research that is needed to make a difference here, so that the health reports can be as valuable or more valuable than they are today. And so we launched that project and have been very successful in bringing African Americans into 23andMe, and a large fraction of those individuals have taken the surveys that are important for the research, and we will be presenting our initial results of that research this fall in November in San Francisco at the American Society of Human Genetics Conference. And before then, we will be summarizing some of that for the participants in the program. So we are very excited to it's still early days, and we are very busy now looking to figure out ways to extend the program to 20,000, because we really need more people to do the research.
How many individuals have tested in the program so far?
We've sent out about 10,000 kits. Not all of them have come back. We've invited or sent kits to about 10,000, and a good fraction of those have sent the kits back, and we have the genetic information from them, and many of those individuals have answered the survey. But we have other African Americans who are participating in research, separate from Roots into the Future. So we have maybe 7,000 people who've answered surveys who would self-identify as African American. So we're starting to make headway. We still want to grow this project even further because, as I said to begin with, we really need large numbers of individuals to get the conclusions to add new reports that are specific to African Americans.
Right. So when looking at the traits, though, and the disease information profiles, why does it indicate a genotype signature with persons of European ancestry and not African ancestry?
So if a study has been done by scientists somewhere in the world where they've studied people with African-American ancestry or African ancestry, then we show the results for that group. If we don't, however, we show the results that were obtained by studying Europeans, they may still be relevant for people whose ancestry traces to other regions. We just can't be sure yet without doing the studies. So we feel like it's good to show something. And as soon as we have, somebody, either we do the research or another group does the research in different populations, we add those populations in, and that's something we've been doing over time.
Okay, but is 23andMe seeing any correlations right now between the SNPs and diseases for the Roots into the Future participants that you are ready to report?
We are just getting some preliminary results. I was just going to look something up here, just a second. So one thing we are looking at, which we don't need as many people for, is sometimes we can see very different risks for disease depending on how much African or European ancestry somebody has. So we think that might be interesting, and that's something new that we are discovering as well.
Oh, okay. Now, you mentioned something about the various surveys. There's a question coming out of the chat. Are the survey studies matched to haplogroups? Are people kind of self-identifying problems or issues?
The surveys are they're not really connected to the haplogroups at all. The Roots into the Future was an invitation to people who considered themselves to be African American or African. So, we take that group as African Americans, and sometimes we have other ways where people tell us that they're African. I'm trying to just look at the abstract that we submitted to this meeting and see if I can give you a little bit more detail. That will be public in September. We've submitted this a report that we will present in November about the Roots into the Future project.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we'll be telling our initial results. And that's where, you know, by that point, we will have confirmed them and we'll be more confident about making the public statements.
Okay. Now, is 23andMe, you mentioned 20,000. You hope to get 20,000. Are you planning on offering additional testing opportunities for the Roots into the Future program?
We're hoping to get funding to do that. It's, you know, obviously there's some expenses involved. We charge for the kit, we charge $299. That's for a lifetime membership. And what we'd like to do for, we have several research projects, including Roots into the Future. And for those projects, we prefer to make the kits available for free. So it's quite an expensive project to fund. We need to fund, you know, another 10,000 individuals at $300 each. So we're looking for funding for that. What we're doing now with the analysis, using about 8,000 African American individuals and their data, is we're looking at associations with osteoporosis and diabetes. So those are some of the first things that seem to be coming through the research pipeline. So I'm looking forward to being able to report that in more detail to the Roots into the Future community in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I am at this point. Do you have anything else you feel you want to share with our group about DNA, health, and ancestry, or have we kind of exhausted you tonight with questions?
Well, I could talk about this all day long, but I do want to point out that we have a number of educational videos that may be helpful in our Genetics 101 section. We have just the basics of DNA and the basics of human prehistory, which explains human migrations. So that's one thing I'd love everyone to be aware of. I also want to encourage people to learn about 23andMe's research program. We are changing the face of genetics research, and we're very excited. We're just finding results every day, and I'm so excited that we started the Roots into the Future project because, frankly, otherwise we were just going to continue just making discoveries that are relevant to Europeans, and that was extremely frustrating. So, just anything anyone can do to support that the research initiative by taking part, filling out surveys, and so on, and learning more about the project and more about genetics would be wonderful.
And someone would want to know where can they find the videos or the educational information that you just mentioned?
Yes. So, one place you can find those, whether or not you're logged in, if you go under Help and go to Genetics 101, there's a little, if you're logged in to the service, you can go to the Help at the top of the page. But there may be, I think there are other ways to get there too, even if you're not logged in. And you connect, you'll see Genetics 101, and then you'll see on the right-hand side links to the two sets of videos on DNA and genetics, and then one on human prehistory.
Okay, and then another question. As far as Roots into the Future, if someone would go on 23andMe, would they be able to find the new Roots into the Future program, or is there such a thing called the new Roots into the Future program?
So at this point, we are looking for funding, and so we are really hoping to find funding to support the next initiative.
Okay. Okay, well, I just want to thank you so much. You have really given us a lot of information. And for those of you who've been listening, you can download this show and listen to it again and again until you feel you really understand what DNA is all about. But thank you so much, Dr. Mountain. You have just provided us with just invaluable information on DNA, health, and ancestry. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Well, everyone, I want to tell you about next week's show. Next week, we're going to have Mr. George Jeter. He is going to be discussing oral histories and personal memoirs. George Jeter, he calls himself an evangelist for African ancestor genealogy because he believes that our people need to research our family histories so that the truth of what really happened in this country can be revealed. So please tune in next Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time to hear Mr. George Jeter. So I just want to say once again, good night, and thank you, Dr. Joanna Mountain. And remember, your ancestors left footprints. Therefore, you should follow the clues that are presented to you through oral history, family records, research at the National Archives and beyond, and that beyond includes your DNA. You can continue this discussion in the DNA forum on afrogenius.com. Also, remember to tune in to the African Roots podcast with Angela Walton Raji on Friday morning. I will keep the chat room open for those of you who want to continue to chat. And if not, I'll close out and everyone could take a good night's sleep. But thank you so much for joining Research at the National Archives and Beyond. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett. Good night, and I look forward to you joining me next Thursday. Good night. Good night, Dr.
Episode 1.